Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Tarantara Shrima Bhagavatam ki, Giridash Maharaj ki, Goprem Anandu. Okay, so tonight we'll continue with chapter 20. What is chapter 20 called? Description of the rainy season and autumn. So tonight we'll finish verses 33 to 49, which will finish the chapter, and tomorrow night we'll begin chapter 21. So it's a description of the rainy season and autumn in Vrindavan. The chapter is full of analogies which are given, which Shukadeva Goswami speaks when he describes Vrindavan, and then poetically he describes Vrindavan in terms of different analogies which he draws. So there's a lot of philosophy in here. As we said previously, Srila Prabhupada has developed a book about this chapter, which is called Light of the Bhagavad, which is accompanied by different drawings for each verse. And Prabhupada planned to take this to Japan back in the 1950s and to preach using an art show, which discusses the philosophy of each verse with a painting, and in this way he was going to preach through a cultural display of Krishna consciousness in the art show. So that never actually took place, but the Light of the Bhagavad, there's one book which is there, which is from Prabhupada, which is based upon this chapter. So we'll finish the chapter. The autumn season, which regenerated the lotus flowers, also restored the various bodies of water to their original purity. Just as the process of devotional service purifies the minds of the fallen yogis when they return to it. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur points out that this is the process of bhakti. The process of bhakti is that, and bhakti yoga means that it purifies the consciousness. Cheto dharpana marjanam. This is the potency of devotional service. It makes us purified in consciousness. Cleanses the chitta. Now, devotional service, in Kali Yuga, it is difficult for devotees to practice devotional service. And when they practice devotional service, sometimes they have difficulties. And having difficulties, sometimes they fall away from devotional service or fall down from the platform or the standards of devotional service. Now, as it says here, when the minds of the fallen yogis, eventually they return to devotional service. Now, devotional service, even if you commit some discrepancy or there's some fault, you go away, but then when you come back to devotional service, nothing is lost from your previous advancement. What's that verse in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna says, Nehava Rasti Prachavayu Navijite Swalpam? So Swalpa Alpa means just a very small amount of devotional service. So you just do a small amount of devotional service, and what takes place? That is never lost. There's no loss, there's no diminution. So in devotional service, whenever you perform bhakti properly, then even if you fall away from the standard, still you take up again from where you left off. So there's quite a, sometimes you see devotees will fall away, or they'll struggle with the regulative principles, or they'll leave Krishna consciousness, but then when they come back, everything is still waiting for them. However, once you come back to devotional service, if you've fallen away, it becomes difficult, because those samskaras from when you fell down, stopped following the regulative principles, or when you left Krishna consciousness, they leave impressions on your consciousness. And then it makes it difficult for devotees to maybe gain their determination or their enthusiasm once again, as strongly. So it is recommended that we do not fall down from the standards, which is not easy in Kali Yuga, but recommended. And especially is recommended, do not leave ISKCON. Do not leave Krishna consciousness. Because if you leave, when you come back, it can become very troublesome. Challenging. So it's already difficult enough in Kali Yuga to practice, so don't make it more difficult for yourself. And quite often devotees leave because they commit offences. Not chanting properly, or not dealing with devotees properly, or different reasons. And then you leave and then it becomes very difficult. So try to practice strictly and then you save yourself a lot of problems. So, any points?
Okay.
Autumn cleared the sky of clouds. Let the animals get out of their crowded living conditions, clean the earth of its covering of mud, and purify the water of contamination. In the same way that loving service rendered to Lord Krishna frees the members of the four spiritual orders from their respective troubles. So we'll read the first two paragraphs.
Every human being must perform the prescribed duties corresponding to one of the four spiritual orders of life. These divisions are celibate, the student life, brahmacharya, material life, grahastha, retired life, vanaprastha, and renounced life, sannyasa. A brahmachari must perform many menial duties during his student life, but as he becomes advanced in loving service to Krishna, his superiors recognize his spiritual status and elevate him to higher duties. The innumerable obligations performed on behalf of wife and children constantly harass their household. But as he becomes advanced in loving service to Krishna, he is automatically elevated by the laws of nature to more enjoyable spiritual occupation, and he somehow minimizes material duties. Those in the vanaprastha or retired order of life also perform many duties. These can also be replaced by ecstatic loving service to Krishna. Similarly, renounced life has many natural difficulties, not the least of which is that sannyasis. Or renouncement are inclined to meditate on the impersonal aspect of the absolute truth. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 12.5, for those whose minds are attached to the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Lord, advancement is exceedingly painful. But as soon as a sannyasi takes to preaching the glories of Krishna in every town and village, his life becomes blissful, sequence of beautiful spiritual realization.
What are the points there? So, what is the analogy which is being given here? Sukadev Goswami is comparing the autumn season and what takes place in autumn to the four ashramas. Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. So the first analogy which is there is just like when the sky is clear of clouds. In autumn, you have blue skies. If you go to India in autumn time, it's Kartik time, then the sky is blue. Not so many clouds are there. So that is like the brahmachari in the analogy. The brahmachari is doing a lot of menial activities for the guru in the ashram, traditionally in the gurukul. And it's very austere, it's very difficult. But by sticking to his devotional service, then gradually those austerities, they bear fruit. And then life becomes more easier, more simple. Similarly, then the second analogy is given. Just like the animals, they get out of their crowded position. When it's raining in the winter season, in the rainy season, monsoon, then all the animals may go into one area to protect themselves. But then they all become disturbed by being so close, and they can't run freely and enjoy themselves. So that's like a grihastha in the analogy which is given by Shukadev Goswami. Grihastha feels like, sometimes you're living with your wife, your children, or your husband, you feel like you're in like a little cell, and everything is like very intense. Do you ever experience like this? Really? So this is the material world. It's like that. Sometimes you feel like Grihastha life is like, it's very intense. You can't get any time to yourself. Everything is very tight, like that, very packed, like that. So it's like the animals at that time. And then they have the opportunity to go free. So it's described, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes that if the Grihastha continues to work on his spiritual advancement, even while in the Grihastha ashram, eventually he'll become liberated from that situation. Everything becomes easier over time. Because children grow up, they can go and do their thing, and then you only have to wait another 20 years and then you'll have freedom. And your life will be peaceful and you'll be happy like that. So that is the nature of the situation. And then the third analogy is just like the when the earth is cleansed of its covering of mud. So in the rainy season, there is mud everywhere because it's raining all the time. Then when autumn comes, everything dries up. So that is said, that's like the vanaprastha life. The vanaprasthas, they cover themselves with earth traditionally in the forest. They live very austerely. But that also bears fruit in due course of time. If you do austerity, the basic principle here is that if you do austerity, tapo divyam, in the human form of life, eventually it will give you benefit. So as a devotee, you have to perform some renunciation. You have to perform austerity. You have to be brahmachari, brahmacharini, or grihastha, or vanaprastha, or then sannyasi. But the whole point of all of the ashrams is to perform austerity for the pleasure of Krishna, to spiritually advance. And then, even though it may feel constrictive, you know, when the children are young and you're in Grihastha ashram, there's so many responses, but then eventually you'll become liberated if you advance in Krishna consciousness. And Krishna will give you an opportunity to serve him more directly. And then the final analogy which is given there is when the water is purified of contamination. So that is like sannyas ashram. Yeah? When the water is very clear, like a lake in the forest, very clear and very pure, that is like sannyas life. Because the sannyasi is very fixed, right? And he's very focused on Krishna, and he purifies his consciousness. It becomes very clear and very sweet and satisfying. So that is the... So basically, Sukadeva Goswami is saying that you just do your various ashrams, whichever ashram you're in, but you go through the austerity, you purify your consciousness, you make spiritual advancement, and gradually you become liberated. So, any points? It's described that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says the vanaprasthas, they go to the forest, they cover their bodies in mud, in earth. They live very simply. But yeah, that's austere, to live in the forest. Literally means vanaprastha. So it means you would live in the forest. That's austere. You know, just in a little hut or something. You know, like if you go to live in a village in India, how would you cope? Living in a little hut. You know, you're from the village or city?
City.
So but you've been to the villages, you've seen those huts. And so if you had to go and live there, it would be austere for you. Like that. So the vanaprastha has to live very austerely. Like that. But if you do, the basic principle here is that if you perform austerity, you'll get liberation. Right? Or you'll become detached from the bodily concept of life. It's necessary in devotional service. Any other points? Okay. So, you want to read the next paragraph? One more. Paragraph number 3.
In the autumn season, the sky returns to its natural blue color. The vanishing of the cloud is like the vanishing of troublesome duties in brahmachari life. Just after summer comes the rainy season, when the animals sometimes become disturbed by the torrential storms and thus huddle together. But the autumn season signals the time for the animals to go to their respective areas and live more peacefully. This represents a householder's becoming free
harassment of family duties and being able to devote more of his time to spiritual responsibilities, which are the real goal of life, both for himself and his family. The removal of the muddy layer on the earth is like the removal of inconveniences of vanaprastha life, and the purification of water is like the sanctification of sannyasa life by once preaching the glories of Krishna without sex desire.
So, any points there? So the basic principle is that we need to simplify our existence. If you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada's motto for ISKCON is simple living, high thinking, like that. You have to live simply. If you don't live simply, you don't make advancement in Krishna consciousness. So regardless of which ashram you're in, you need to simplify your existence. Everything needs to become more simple, more easy, like that. Do not complicate things. Even as a grihastha, live simply. Give in charity. Do not over-accumulate. Rupa Goswami says, these things, they destroy your devotional service. Achahara, priyashascha, prajalpo, niyamagraha, janasangas, chaloliam, cha. So these things, they destroy, vinashati, means they destroy your devotional service. So in devotional service, you have to live simply. So even as a grihastha, you have to constantly give in charity. Do not over-accumulate. Don't get too many material possessions. Just like, you know, in my ashram, and even in the last few weeks, I've noticed it's just things, they just start appearing. You can't even remember where they came from. There's more things coming to the house, and you know, someone gives you this and gives you that, and then suddenly, you know. So yeah, periodically I just get there and just, you know, give them away or dispose or, you know, move them on like that. Don't over accumulate. Don't make your life more complicated than what it needs to be. Because the nature of Grihastha Ashram is that it just expands. But actually, if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, you have to simplify. No, not expand. I mean, you know, if you're young and you're passionate, then get your grihastha desires fulfilled, you know, buy a couple of houses and then, you know, have two or three cars and go on holidays and stuff. But when it's out of your system, then reduce it back again. But the basic principle of spiritual life is you have to simplify. You should not over accumulate because it becomes a distraction to bhakti. Achahara, priyashas. Priyashas means you have to over-endeavor. Yeah. Too much hard work. Yeah. So much hard work that then you have not enough time to practice Krishna consciousness. Okay. So just do enough to do, maintain yourself nicely. Yeah. But not, don't over-endeavor. That's the point. The clouds, having given up all they possessed, shone forth with purified effulgence, just like peaceful sages who have given up all material desires and are thus free from all sinful propensities. Jagan, you want to read?
When the clouds are filled with water, they are dark and cover the sun's rays, just as the material mind of an impure man covers the soul shining within. But when the clouds pour down their rain, they become white and then brilliantly reflect the shining sun, just as a man who gives up all material desires and sinful propensities becomes purified and then brilliantly reflect his own soul and the supreme soul within.
Any points there?
We should give up their desires.
All of them.
Yeah.
Even for boxing.
Srila Prabhupada desired that we should be simple living and high thinking.
Ah.
Most importantly.
Yeah. Come and live on the farms. Practice simple living and high thinking.
Krishna conscious all the time.
100%.
24 hours.
Always.
no trouble with us. Any other points?
So basically, it's explaining during the autumn season or just before that, there will be a heavy rain, so the clouds will be heavier and it will be pouring. So that analogy has been given when the cloud is darker or it's heavy. So that's the impure state or when the soul is covered with it and the impurities of the anathas have been covered. And now when once the rain, once the cloud is pouring, the rain, it will be clear. Basically, we'll have a clear sky. So that's when we'll understand the self within. And therefore, the Supreme Soul inside us will sit in with us.
Yeah, it is said that austerity is the wealth of the brahmanas. And brahmana means one who is practicing or focused on Brahman. Brahman means spirit. So literally a brahmana means one who is focused on spiritual development. So as devotees, all of us are brahmanas, technically speaking, because we're focused on spiritual advancement. That's our focus in our life. So austerity is the wealth. How do you advance in Krishna consciousness? You have to do tapasya. That's what we said. Tapo divyam. This is what Rishabdev teaches us. The human life is meant for performing austerities to attain Krishna. So you have to find out in consultation with your gurus, with senior Vaishnavas, what sort of austerities you should perform to satisfy Krishna. So that is the goal of human life. So then that's the wealth of the Brahmanas. That means you become you develop tejas or potency as a devotee. When you do austerities for Krishna, then you become empowered by Krishna to spread the Krishna consciousness movement. And you advance, which means you come closer to Krishna. So basically here it is said that we should do it. Make your life dedicated to Krishna. Austerity by definition means you have to reject something which is not easy to reject in order to attain Krishna. So sometimes you have to give up things you don't like giving up. But if that means you have to do that to get to Krishna, then you do it. Rupa Goswami said this is one of the principles of bhakti. If you don't give up things which are difficult for Krishna's pleasure, you cannot advance in Krishna consciousness. And ultimately we have to give up everything in this world, all attachments. Any points?
To me
it
says that, you know, Rupa Goswami said,
during this season, the mountains sometimes released their pure water and sometimes did not. Just as experts in transcendental science sometimes give the nectar of transcendental knowledge and sometimes do not. Sri Chaitanya.
The first part of this chapter described the rainy season and the second part of it has been dealing with the autumn season, which begins when the rain stops. During the rainy season, water always flows from the mountains, but during the autumn, the water sometimes flows and sometimes does not. Similarly, great saintly teachers sometimes speak extensively on the spiritual knowledge and sometimes they are silent. The sanctified soul is closely in touch with the Supreme Soul, and according to his desires, a competent spiritual scientist may or may not describe the absolute truth, depending on the specific circumstances.
Any points there? So the advanced devotee, when does the advanced devotee speak?
When there is a need.
Or when he sees there's eagerness on behalf of the listeners. If the devotee is not eager to hear, then the devotee, whoever is speaking, does not feel inclined or enthused to speak. So according to our, you can say, loyam, or lobe means eagerness to hear, or utsaha. Utsaha means enthusiasm, to hear. So if we're enthusiastic to hear about Krishna, then the devotee will speak. He'll reveal his realizations about Krishna. But if you're not enthusiastic, you won't speak. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives the example in this, in his commentary on this verse, of Maharaj Rahugana. So which canto was that? Fifth canto. Maharaj Rahugana, who was instructed by? Yeah, Jad Bharata. So Jad Bharat only spoke to him when he became qualified. And what was his qualification? Yeah, he became humble. If you're proud, then the devotee will not speak to you, because you know everything. So if you know everything, who can tell you anything? But when you're humble, then the devotee will speak. So Jad Bharata, he was Paramahamsa, but Rahugana was not qualified. And when Rahugana became humble, then Jad Bharata said, okay, now I will instruct you. So that is the qualification. So when we become humble and eager to hear, then the advanced devotee will speak. Otherwise, what can he say? Like sometimes one devotee says, oh, you know, tell that devotee, you know, some devotee is doing something wrong. So some devotee comes to you and he says, you know, you tell him like that. But you look at that devotee, you think, well, he's not going to listen. Even though you know what to say and you know what he needs, he's not going to listen. So you can't say anything. No? There's no qualification there. He's not humble. He's not submissive. He's not eager. No? So then nothing can be said. Same as when you're giving class, you see the devotees are eager to hear, then you will speak your realizations. If the devotee is not eager, no problem. Just say, any questions? Any points?
Sometimes if the advanced devotees are in trance, think about the Lord, also they don't speak, can't speak. That's why it is ecstasy. Once I think Srila Prabhupada left the lecture, I was thinking about it for someone.
Yeah, that doesn't happen very often. The fish swimming in the increasingly shallow water did not at all understand that the water was diminishing. Did we read the one before?
Yeah.
Is it the right one? Okay. The fish swimming in the increasingly shallow water did not at all understand that the water was diminishing, just as foolish family men cannot see how the time they have left to live is diminishing with every passing day. Janesh.
After the rainy season, the water gradually cools down, but stupid fish do not understand. Thus, they are often stranded on the lake shores and riverbanks. Similarly, those infatuated with family life do not understand that the remainder of their family is constantly decreasing. Thus, they fail to perfect
So what is being described here? What is it? Yeah, it should. Anything else?
Also, is rising and setting of the sun with his span of one's life. One knows the Krishna consciousness, one knows the Krishna consciousness for the death of death. Similarly, a person has to spend time in Krishna consciousness, otherwise, they'll be a little sweet.
So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says this is describing a rich person. A rich person just gets carried away by the material energy, and then he forgets about Krishna. That's why earlier on, then it was described in the pastime of Manigriva and Nalakravara that that pastime is representing attachment to wealth. And Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, the Acharyas, or maybe Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he comments that of all of the Jamma, Aishwarya, Shruta, Srivya, all of the material opulences that we can attain as devotees, the most challenging or the most difficult or the most intoxicating is attachment to wealth. So when you become wealthy, then you just forget everything. Because you have so much facility, and then you lose your seriousness in regards to Krishna consciousness, because you're just enjoying the material energy. So it says here that this is the analogy which is given. So if Krishna wants you to become wealthy, what should you do? Use it in Krishna's service. Give it to your guru. Sometimes you get lots of money, and then you think, now what do I do with all the money? And just ask your guru. Prabhupada said, you give me $1 million today, by tomorrow, I will have spent it all. So you don't know what to do with your money, just give it to your spiritual master. He'll work out what to do with it very quickly. Any points? That's nice. Good. Just as a miserly, poverty-stricken person overly absorbed in family life suffers because he cannot control his senses, the fish swimming in the shallow water had to suffer the heat of the autumn sun. Nila Gop.
As described in the previous verse, unintended fish are not aware of the diminishing water. One may think these fish are still happy according to the world for ignorance is bliss. But even the ignorant fish are scorched by the autumn sun. Similarly, all the attached family may consider the ignorance of spiritual life blissful, is constantly disturbed by the problems of family life. And indeed, his uncontrolled senses lead him into a situation of
undergrowth. So what's this one describing? Krishna Chakravarti Thakur said this is describing the poor person. Previous verse describes the rich man, now the poor man. So same thing. In the purport, there is Sridhananda Maharaji quotes that saying in English, ignorance is bliss. So in the material world, when you just have a little bit of sense gratification, you think everything is alright. And the Bhagavatam describes this in the second canto, that people work hard all day, but then they come home at night, they think, I just enjoy a little bit of sex life, and then all the austerity was worthwhile. So that is the nature of the material energy of Maya. It covers the living entity, it covers the conditions. So he thinks, I'm suffering so much, like a poor person, I'm suffering so much, I'm going through so much austerity, but then I just enjoy a little bit of sense gratification, it makes it all right. So then it describes that when the heat of the material energy rises, then if we're intelligent, that will break our attachment. Unintelligent people, even when things become very difficult, sometimes life becomes very difficult, but still they don't realize the lesson, that we're meant to become detached from this material world. But as a devotee, when we go through suffering, we should understand this one point. We're meant to become detached. So that's the whole point of the Krishna consciousness movement. When the material energy becomes intense, develop detachment. If you're intelligent, you should develop detachment before the material energy becomes intense. But if you can't, then the materialistic person, even when he's suffering, he still tries to enjoy. That is foolishness. So, any points? Generally, the different areas of land gave up their muddy condition and the plants grew past their unripe stage in the same way that sober sages give up egotism and possessiveness. These are based on things different from the real self, namely the material body and its byproducts. What's that? One verse? Is that the right verse?
Yeah, right.
Okay. So read the purport. Sharadarata, you can read the purport.
The word adishu in this verse indicates the byproducts of the body, such as children, home, and wealth.
Very good. What are the points there?
Yeah, they are all useless.
Everything is useless. What is useless?
In the spiritual life.
What is useless?
Well, they just make us more attached.
What?
To this world.
What is useless?
All these children and family.
Really?
Really.
That is your realization after reaching your 70th year? That is your realization? It is all useless?
Well, it went there before I went.
Yeah, so that's the nature of the. So you just see right before our eyes. This is the Bhagavatam right before our eyes. Mataji gets to near the end of her life, and what's her realization? The whole thing was useless. Shrama evihi kevalam. What was the point of the whole thing? Is that right? The Bhagavatam said it in the first canto. We have to wait till we get to the 10th canto, and still we don't understand it. The whole thing is useless. It's just a waste of energy. My Guru Maharaj said that to me. You know, I was sitting up there with him in that room upstairs. And I was a brahmachari at the time, and he was talking about grihastas. There's grihastas outside his room, and he could hear them talking. And he looked at me and he said, it's a waste of energy. It's a waste of energy. And he said, there's no pleasure in it. No pleasure in grihastas. It's just a waste of energy. So you have to go through 70 years and then you understand. It's a waste of energy. There's no pleasure in it. So that's what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. There's no pleasure there. It's a waste of energy. So, what is the Sanskrit? Because in the English it says, in the translation it says, a sense of possessiveness and egotism. What is the Sanskrit for that? Ahamamati. So this is famous throughout the Bhagavatam. This sense of I and mine is what binds us to this world. Aham. Aham means egoism. All of us are too egotistical. We think in terms of I. According to your false upadhi, you think I am a man, I am a woman, I am Indian, I am Australian, I am a security guard, I am an IT worker, I'm a doctor, or whatever I am, engineer. And you think this is I, this is upadhi. So this false sense of I, aham, this is what binds us in this material world. We think we are. And then we become attached to it. We want to achieve. And you get on Facebook, and you want to achieve. You say, I did this and I did that and I got this certificate and I got this degree. And you put everything on Facebook. And then if you can't do it yourself, you make your kids do it. Right? You try to live your desires through your children. If you can't be successful yourself, you try to get it through your kids. You send them to Kuma. So they can become successful. And then you can say, oh, my kid did it. And then you put that on Facebook. My kid got a degree. He went to Melbourne University. Now he's going to Oxford. And now he's all these different upadis. So aham mameti. Mameti means possessiveness. Because my ego, then, so me or things related to me. Just like if India wins the cricket, how do all the Indians feel? right? You didn't win the cricket. You didn't do anything. But because you're born in the same country, you think, oh, we won. So, aham, mameti. And then the Australians win the cricket, and then you think, oh, I won. Or the Olympics were just on. So the Australian wins the gold medal, you think, oh, we won the gold medal. So, aham, mameti. So everyone in this world is bound up by this egotism and possessiveness. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, Maduya Kalambini, you have to reverse it back to its original state of consciousness. I am Krishna's servant. Krishna is my Lord and Master. That is pure consciousness. At the moment we have contaminated consciousness, but pure consciousness is the opposite. I am Krishna's servant. Krishna is my Master. That is reality. So Bhagavad Gita is saying, give up your attachments to this material world. Otherwise, you'll stay here forever. As long as you have this conception, I and mine, then you can't go back to the spiritual world. You have to give up I, you have to give up mine. So you have to break these things. That's what the entire Bhagavad Gita is about. Especially now. I mean, tomorrow night we start the first chapter, which directly describes the gopis and their relationship with Krishna. This is the most exalted. You know, at the moment in my personal study, you know, I study Bhagavatam. It's also in my personal study, you know, to teach. But in my personal study, you know, part of what I'm studying is Bhajana Rahasya. So when it gets to the seventh chapter and Bhaktivinoda Thakur is commenting on the seventh verse of Shikshastika, the verses that he quotes to explain the seventh verse of Shikshastika is from the 21st chapter of the 10th canto, which is the gopis hearing the song of Krishna's flute. So this is the most exalted level of consciousness. So we can't understand these things until we give up your possession of I and mine. Otherwise, that's what holds us back. That's why we can't understand. Yeah. If you start thinking, I am Krishna's, Krishna's my, then you understand, it all becomes clear. So you have to purify your consciousness. Any points? Okay. With the arrival of autumn, the ocean and the lakes became silent, their water still, just like a sage who has desisted from all material activities and given up his recitation of Vedic mantras. So, Mahatma Prabhu.
One recites ordinary Vedic mantras for material promotion, mystic power and impersonal salvation. But when he is completely free of personal desire, he vibrates the transcendental glory of the Supreme Power exclusively.
So, can you point there?
We have got to advance spiritually, and then only we can describe, because we know what love has asked for Krishna. So we just want to describe his glory rather than him.
So the sages, quite often they take what is called mauna vrat. Mauna vrat means silence, they won't speak. In Krishna consciousness, devotees, we don't take mauna vrat, because we follow the instruction of Lord Chaitanya and of Krishna. Krishna says in Gita, satato kirtiyanto mam, and in Shikshastika, Lord Chaitanya says, kirtanya sada hari. So we're meant to always chant the glories of Krishna. So that is our mauna. Mauna means we don't speak prajalpa. What does prajalpa mean? Prajalpa means unnecessary talk. So much of our life is full of unnecessary talk. And all the non-devotees, that's all they do, just unnecessary talk. So we don't take mauna vrat, but we only speak about Krishna. On top of it, hearing and chanting about Krishna. That is mauna. That is perfection. So a devotee does not renounce speaking, but everything must be connected. Any points?
Yeah,
Okay. In the same way that the practitioners of yoga bring their senses under strict control to check their consciousness from flowing out through the agitated senses, the farmers erected strong mud banks to keep the water within their rice fields from draining out. So, Jamuna Lila.
Farmers save the water within the fields by building strong walls so that the water contained within the fields cannot run out. There is hardly any hope for new rainfall. Therefore, they want to save whatever is in the field. Similarly, a person who is actually advanced in self-realization protects his energy by controlling his senses. It is advised that after the age of 50, one should retire from family life and conserve the energy of the body for utilization in the advancement of Krishna consciousness. Unless one is able to control the senses and engage them in the transcendental loving service of Mukunda, there is no possibility of salvation.
Okay, so what were the instructions?
Like in Bhagavad Gita, the Lord gives an analogy of the tortoise. The tortoise retracts its limbs inside its shell and it sees any danger. In the same way, a devotee retracts his senses and he sees stimulus, material stimulus outside, but he brings out his senses to be ready and he needs to be followed for Krishna.
Anything else?
There's some, you know, religious senses are like serpents. And then just destroy. So you have to be really careful about using your senses, he said.
Yeah, be careful.
Not use it for sense gratification, but for the gratification.
So what does Prabhupada say here in the purport? It's a common theme if you go through Prabhupada's purports and the teachings of the Bhagavatam, all through our philosophy. At the age of 50, you have to get serious. Okay? If you want, you can get serious before 50. If you want, you can get serious at 20. Or 30. Or 40. But 50, that's it. Time to get serious. 60 and 70, then you just keep going. Prabhupada said at the age of 50 you have to get serious about the spiritual life. You have to conserve the energy of the body. Instead of using the energy to progress materially, you have to begin to wind it all up. And it doesn't happen automatically. You don't just think when you get to 50, that's it. No, your desires are still there. You have to work on it. It's a lifelong sadhana. Or it's a lifelong commitment to overcome these things. You know, the famous example was that Akbar, who had the, he was arguing with his minister.
Birbal.
It was a Birbal and Akbar. They were having that discussion. And Birbal said, sex desire doesn't go away by itself. Akbar said, no, it goes away with age. So Birbal said, okay, come. So he took him. And then when he walked into the dying man's room, right, the dying man looked at Akbar's daughter, not at Akbar, even though the king himself came to. So then Birbal said, see, I told you. So these things don't just go. It's not when you get to 50, it all just disappears. It can be stronger than ever. Your material desires can be just as strong. Your body's desires can be as strong. Your desire for wealth and property and possessions can be stronger. So it's not these things disappear. But at the age of 50 as a devotee, if it's not decreasing by itself, then you have to make some extra special effort. So 50 is like that. It's like a marking point. You can really test yourself when you get to 50 and see, am I getting serious about this or not? And if you're not, then you have to make adjustments. Even earlier than that, you can make adjustments. Devotees can adjust things. Voluntarily you can renounce things. Just like Kartik is coming. Kartik is a holy month. It comes in maybe another 6 weeks. And it will be Kartik. So then already I'm thinking. Okay, what to do. Right? Renounce certain things or give up certain things or put more time on what's actually important, which is to develop my Krishna consciousness and less on other things. So you have to make adjustments in your life continuously. Right? But at the age of 50, you have to make major adjustments. If it's not already happening organically, then you have to sit down and look at yourself very carefully. So Prabhupada always says this, based on the Bhagavad Gita's teachings. Any points?
Well, that's where the sanskara comes. Some children are born with such sanskara that from their childhood they have got the interest. Because the 50 might be too late for others, some people don't need to leave.
Yeah, the Bhagavad Gita says get serious now. Why wait?
That's what the Lord Maharaj said to
his friends. Yeah. Yeah, if you get to 50, then, and if you're not serious, then get serious. That's the point. The autumn moon relieved all creatures of the suffering caused by the sun's rays, just as wisdom relieves a person of the misery caused by his identity with his material body, and as Lord Mukunda relieves Vrindavan's ladies of the distress caused by their separation from him. So in this verse, we're directly getting a hint about the Braja Gopis, because the next chapter in a few verses is the first time the Braja Gopis are described explicitly. Up until now, it's very hidden. The Acharyas comment, Kavikarnapur comments, Vishnachakraya Thakur comments, but Sanatana Goswami comments, but it's not really spoken of. But now it's about to be in the next chapter. It goes very, very extremely deep and extremely exalted. So now it's being mentioned because Sukadeva Goswami is beginning to meditate on the Gopis. So he gives a nice analogy. He says, how do we destroy our suffering? Hands up if you are suffering in this material world. Okay, a few devotees are suffering. So, you want to know how to relieve yourself of your suffering? Then read the Bhagavad Gita. It's in this verse, it tells you. The autumn moon relieved all creatures of the suffering caused by the sun rays. So it's an analogy. How do we relieve our suffering? Or who relieves our suffering? The moon. Right? Now, who is the moon? It's interesting. Right? Which dynasty is Krishna appearing? So who is the moon? It's Krishna. Right? So it's interesting. This is interesting, this line. Just as wisdom. Right? What does wisdom mean? Spiritual knowledge means what we're doing here. Knowledge about Krishna. Knowledge about Krishna. Right? The Bhagavatam. Wisdom relieves a person of the misery caused by identifying with his material body. Right? Why? I asked, who's suffering? Everyone said they're suffering. Why are you suffering? Yeah, because you identify with your body. As long as you identify with your body, you must suffer. If you don't identify with the body and the mind, you don't suffer. But if you do, you're guaranteed to suffer. So what is spiritual knowledge? Spiritual divyagyan, fride prakashito. Spiritual knowledge means it teaches you you're not your body, you are Krishna's servant. If you identify as Krishna's servant, you don't suffer. If you identify as the body and the mind, you will suffer. So we have to identify properly. And then it says, and as Lord Mukunda relieves Vrindavan's ladies of the distress caused by their separation from him. So in other words, where is our ultimate shelter? The 10th canto is called Ashraya. Ashraya means?
Shelter.
Who is our shelter? It is Krishna. Krishna relieves our suffering. If you're with Krishna, you cannot be suffering. You must be blissful. But if you're without Krishna, how will you feel? Miserable. And if you're with Krishna, you will feel blissful. So take your choice. Hands up if you want to be blissful. Yeah, we say we do, then be with Krishna. If you're with Krishna, you're always happy. So as soon as class finishes, where will you go? Asleep, very good. So advanced, Nila Gopa. So if you want to be with Krishna, where do you go? Straight away you go to the temple. Most devotees, when class finishes, they go straight to see Radha Vallabha. How can you be miserable? Actually, Prabhupada says it's an offense to be miserable before the deities. If you go before the deities and you're not happy, then that's like a offense towards Krishna. Krishna's happy. And you go and then you're all miserable. And Krishna says to Radharani, here he comes again. Miserable person, keeps coming all the time. All these anxieties and problems. But if you associate with Krishna, you cannot be. Because Krishna is always happy. You read the Bhagavatam, what we're reading here, whenever Krishna goes anywhere, everyone travels with him. He's never alone. Right? He always has large group of devotees. Cowherd boys, or then he sneaks off, and then the gopis, or with his parents, but it's always everyone. And wherever he is, it says it's like a mahotsava. Mahotsava means a festival. It's like, was anyone unhappy on Janmashtami? Can you be unhappy on Janmashtami? It's not possible. Why? Because one day of the year where you actually focus your mind on Krishna. So why can't it be Janmashtami every day? Why can't we focus our mind on Krishna every day? The other days of the year, or we get into IBM and wherever your consciousness goes. But on Janmashtami, you focus on Krishna. And what happens? Everyone's blissful. Everyone's happy. So that's the secret. The secret is if you live with Krishna, you'll always be happy. Because Krishna is a walking festival. Wherever he walks, it's just, there's a festival going on around him. That's what it's like. It's ecstatic. So if you associate with him, you'll always be happy. Yeah, point.
And what if you don't necessarily be miserable when you're on the altar, on the altar, but tears come out, right?
Tears of happiness, or tears because you're happy to see Krishna, or tears because you're thinking of something in the material world which is making you unhappy? Yeah, well, that's generic, doesn't it? Tears related to Krishna or tears related to the material world? Yeah, that's fine. That should be there. That should be there. Okay. Free of clouds and filled with clearly visible stars, the autumn sky shone brilliantly, just like the spiritual consciousness of one who has directly experienced the purport of the Vedic literatures. So at night time, in autumn, everything is clear and the stars, they shine brightly. Right? The Bhagavatam says that's like a pure devotee. So if you think of Srila Prabhupada, what was Prabhupada like? He was shining brightly. Why? Because he was Krishna conscious. When you're Krishna conscious, you become effulgent. So the sky at night becomes very beautiful and effulgent. That's what a pure devotee is like. He's effulgent. The full moon shone in the sky, surrounded by stars, just as Sri Krishna, the lord of the Yadu dynasty, shone brilliantly on the earth, surrounded by the Vrishnis. Except for the gopis whose hearts had been stolen by Krishna, the people could forget their suffering by embracing the wind coming from the flower-filled forest. This wind was neither hot nor cold. So Shukadev Goswami is introducing the gopis, because the next chapter is their chapter, specifically. None of the chapters yet have specifically spoken about Madhurya Ras. We've heard about Sakya Ras, we've heard about Vatsalya Ras, but the next chapter, Madhurya Ras will be spoken about. So this is being introduced by Shukadev Goswami. By the influence of the autumn season, all the cows, doe, women, and female birds became fertile and were followed by their respective mates in search of sexual enjoyment. Just as activities performed for the service of the Supreme Lord are automatically followed by all beneficial results. So as you advance in Krishna consciousness, you receive everything. You attain Krishna. So Prabhupada explains this. You have to follow the process. And if you follow the process, you get the result. My Guru Maharaj said that to me many, many years ago when I was a new devotee. He said that if you stick at something, eventually you will attain it. So that is our focus in Krishna consciousness. You just stick to following the process and you will attain Krishna. That's the goal. Krishna is attainable, but you have to follow the process very perfectly and very carefully. O King Parikshit, when the autumn sun rose, all the lotus flowers blossomed happily, except the night-blooming Kumut. Just as in the presence of a strong ruler, everyone becomes fearless, except the thieves. In all the towns and villages, people held great festivals, performing the Vedic fire sacrifice for honoring and tasting the first grains of the new harvest, along with similar celebrations that followed local customs and tradition. Thus the earth, rich with newly grown grain and especially beautified by the presence of Krishna and Balaram, shone beautifully as an expansion of the Supreme Lord. So at the end of the rainy season, in autumn, what takes place? All the grains come up. And then what do? Prabhupada explains the purport. They take the grains and they take it to the temple and they offer the first grains for the season to the deities. So it's like an old tradition. So in Vrindavan, they also do this. And then what takes place in a few chapters' time? Krishna stops the whole thing. What does he do? They take all the grains they're supposed to be offering, and Krishna says, no. Let's offer it to Govardhan Hill. Everything should go to Giriraj. And then what happens? Govardhan Puja begins. The first Govardhan Puja. And if you go to the very end of Canto 10, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says one of the reasons, main reasons, why Krishna came to earth was to establish Govardhan Puja. Now, Krishna was on earth how many years ago?
5,000 years ago.
Yeah, around about 5,000 years ago. And who was still on earth, who was there when Krishna was here? Giriraj. You can get on a plane. You can fly to Delhi. You can get off the plane. You can get in the taxi. You can drive to Govardhan. How long will it take you from now till then? Within 24 hours, right now, if I drive out now, within 24 hours I could be standing next to Govardhan Hill. And Giriraj was there when Krishna was there. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says one of the main reasons why Krishna appeared was to establish Govardhan Puja. Because Govardhan is non-different from Krishna. Very significant point. So these traditions have always been there in the village of Vrindavan. And Krishna stopped the whole thing and said, no, we're going to offer everything to Giriraj. And that's in a few chapters now. The merchants, sages, kings, and brahmachari students kept in by the rain were at last free to go out and attain their desired objects, just as those who achieve perfection in this life can, when the proper time comes, leave the material body and attain their respective forms. Mm. So Prabhupada writes a very nice comment. And he says at the end of his purport, the yogi transfers himself to the higher planets. The devotee goes to the planet of the Supreme Lord, Goloka Vrindavan, or the Vaikunthas, and thus enjoys eternal spiritual life. So Prabhupada says that we can go back to the spiritual world. If you practice devotional service sincerely, Prabhupada said if you chant 16 rounds every day and follow the four regular principles, Prabhupada said he will take us back to Godhead. Prabhupada said that. Which is not so easy, because seeing Kali Yuga, hardly anyone's doing that. But Prabhupada said if you do that in Kali Yuga, if you follow the four regular principles, you chant 16 rounds, Prabhupada said he will take us back to Godhead. You do your whole life, and then Krishna will take it. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.